Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Daily Costa Brief. It's our weekly show about politics. I'm Marcos Melitzes. I'm here with Carrie Alleveld. And today we're going to be talking about the Republican Party and how they're tying themselves up in knots over reproductive rights. This has been an issue that they used for great effect, a culture war effect for decades, right? For decades, rallying their base. That dog finally caught the car. Don't know what to do with it because the car is trampling the crap out of that dog. It's like, I can see the cartoon, right? Where the dog's just like stuck between the wheels because it is beating them up. They've lost two election cycles in a row because in large part because of the abortion issue. We've always said that this wasn't just about abortion, that it was also about contraception. And oh my God, is that suddenly an issue?
They're coming, you know what? They're coming for contraception. And you know, everybody's like, no, they won't do that. They won't do it.
Yeah, but what happened this week, Carrie? I'm gonna let you introduce this because I'm still blown away by this. I cannot believe that Donald Trump is this dumb to walk into this minefield. But he walked into a real minefield this week. Like, he has just validated everything we've been saying. And people are like, no, like you said, they're like, no, that's you're being hyperbolic. Same thing they said about us in abortion, right? Yep. Same thing. We said they're coming for abortion. And oh, no, it's boy who cried wolf. And now we're saying they're coming because they're coming for that. They're coming for gay marriage. Yep. They're coming for interracial marriage. They're coming for all of those things. This is not hyperbole, right? It was literally in the Supreme Court decision, the Dobbs Supreme Court decision. The privacy rights underpinning abortion rights also underpin all of those issues, and they want those, they want the quote, the states to make those decisions. And of course they want the feds to make those decisions too, but it's their talking point. And so Donald Trump just opened a whole new can of worms today. And today is Tuesday.
The 21st.
Donald Trump opened up a can of worms. So I'm gonna kick it to you, Carrie, to explain what just happened. Cause it's freaking mind blowing.
No, it's wild. I mean, really. So, you know, first of all, I'll just say this. I don't think that Donald Trump really knows his way around and inside and out of the abortion issue, the IVF issue, the contraception issue, but he thinks he's given himself a get out of jail free card by saying the states will regulate everything, right? We're just going to leave it up to the states. And I kind of think he just thinks, oh, that's just going to, you know, he can just say that about basically anything and it'll be okay, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it's bad. It was already bad on abortion, right? When you have a state like Arizona, you know, just doing the, you know, putting in place the, or allowing to go into effect a Civil War era abortion ban, right? And then Trump has to come out and say, well, you know, this, it's really up to the states, but you know, Arizona should really fix that because obviously he knows, you know, it's bad for him, right? So today, and by the time
before you continue, like Donald Trump literally said when he talked about the states, you know, kicking it to the states, he said, now I don't have to worry about this issue. It's off the table. He literally thought that.
He really believed that. He really believed it. And so no one's, I mean, I don't know what his campaign does, but no one's really told him, hey, guess what? You know, like you're not totally off the hook here, but he still just throws this out like, yeah, you know, I don't have to worry about vetoing any national stuff, a national abortion ban, because it's up to the states. And I don't have to answer whether or not I'm going to sign a national abortion ban because it's up to the states. And so it'll never become a problem. Well, we all know that if Republicans get control of Congress and take the White House, they are going to have that bill on Trump's desk, like lickety split, as fast as they possibly can. Just like Trump's Supreme Court took up the issue of abortion and overturned Roe just as fast and as soon as they possibly could do it once they had the votes for it.
It's their number one priority. Yeah.
So, all right, without further ado, Trump gave an interview this morning to a local CBS affiliate in Pittsburgh. And the interviewer here is a, you know, political analyst, John Delano. And he is asking Trump about contraception. Now, kudos to him for a rather stoic reaction to what Trump says. He has virtually no reaction, which is wild. But let's listen to Trump answer some questions here, and then we'll come back on the other side. And I have a question for Marcos actually about this. So.
So related to this is the whole issue of contraceptives. Do you support any restrictions on a person's right to contraception?
Well, we're looking at that, and I'm going to have a policy on that very shortly. And I think it's something that you'll find interesting. And it's another issue that's very interesting. But you will find it, I think, very smart. I think it's a smart decision. But we'll be releasing it very soon.
Well, that suggests that you may want to support some restrictions. Like the morning after pill or something.
We are also, you know, things really do have a lot to do with the states. And some states are going to have different policies than others. But I'm coming out within a week or so with a very comprehensive policy, which I'll get to you immediately.
Okay, good.
They're coming for it, Carrie.
Okay. So I just want to say, as a candidate for president, when someone asks you if you support any restrictions to contraception, the only answer is no.
And fast.
No, yeah. No, I do not. Next question, right?
Maybe like, that is the craziest question I got ever asked. Why would you even think to ask
like,
me?
Like, you could have laughed. Are you kidding? You could have laughed.
So this is a bombshell, Carrie. When I saw
it's a bombshell. Can I just ask you, Marcos?
Okay.
As a voter who plans to vote in November,
yes.
Are you excited about the idea of an interesting, quote unquote, new Republican policy on contraception?
Only if it's smart, quote unquote. If it's quote unquote smart, then it might be, quote, interesting. And so, Carrie, I still cannot fathom who is advising Trump. Are they actually coming up with a contraception policy, or did he just make that up on the spot? Because literally, you just said it, Carrie. The only answer is like, no. Even if they have plans for it, the answer is no. You lie about it, because this is so incredibly electorally toxic that I bet the problem here, Carrie, is that Democrats make a big deal about it. People aren't going to believe it. It is so ludicrous that a national politician is talking about restricting access to contraceptives. It's so ludicrous that nobody's going to believe it. That's how ridiculous and crazy that is. So I thought we were going to be talking about abortion the whole election cycle. No, we're going to start talking about contraception the election cycle, and it's on video.
Yeah.
Like he doubled down on it. He kept talking about it.
Well, then he pulled his get out of jail free card, right? He was like, well, you know, it's going to be up to the states. I think it's going to depend from state to state. So now we're not just going to have a patchwork of abortion access. You know, we're going to also have a patchwork of contraception access is what he's suggesting, right? And what that really means is that there is an entire region of the country, which is going to be the South, the Southeast, but also the South Southern band from, you know, probably North Carolina all the way to about Arizona, right? Where Republicans are going to be trying to regulate contraception and already have been, frankly. I mean, this is not an entirely new concept for Republicans in the state, in Republican-led states. You know, they want to go after and have gone after, you know, and abortion is not, it's not my number one area of expertise, but I do know that they've gone after the morning after pill, things like that, right? They want to regulate this, and they do not want, you know, and they certainly don't want abortion medication. But that's abortion. That's still like under the realm of abortion, right? The contraception thing is, you know, who knows? Maybe they don't want you to be able to use an IUD. You know, who knows what kind of harebrained stuff they're going to come up with?
They think that sex outside of marriage is immoral, and anything that facilitates that, such as any contraception, it could be condoms. This is a religious fanatic-based ideology. This notion that you cannot decide for yourself your own reproductive health, and you cannot make decisions. You cannot plan your own family.
Right.
This also hits IVF, right? This hits all of that. Right? They do not want, because their religion says that sex is for procreation only. Anything outside of that. And again, we're even talking just about heterosexual sex right now. You know, they're going to be hitting, you know, this is also a gateway into trying to limit gay rights as well. I mean, this is right. all of the same battle, right? It's about
chip
sex.
Away at yeah. all kinds of freedoms, right? They're going to chip away at all kinds of freedoms, and they're coming at, I mean, this is wild. We won't spend too much time on this. I have a wild thing to say. So people have lamented for a long time. I was just thinking about this the other day, and I, you know, I'm not going to say that we shouldn't lament this, but you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is as much of a progressive icon as she was, right? Her death while she was still a Supreme Court justice opened up the door for extremists to get conservative majority
yeah.
on the Supreme Court, right? And people lament that all the time. I'm just going to say this right here, and I'm not, you know, I obviously wish that Dobbs had not been overturned, but I mean, Roe v. Wade had not been overturned, and Dobbs had not been decided by the extremist wing of the Supreme Court. Having said that, if that had not happened, I have no idea electorally where we would be right now, because I'm not convinced that Democrats would have been able to turn back the red wave in 2018. And mm-hmm. I'm not convinced at all that we would have the chance that we do to potentially elect Joe Biden for a second term without the issue of abortion and the way and the fact that it put front and center for American voters that Republicans are honestly trying to chip away at freedoms that, you know, everything from abortion to voting rights to LGBTQ advancements, you know, all kinds of civil rights advancements. They are literally trying to chip away at those and take freedoms away in this new Trump era of the Republican Party. They are taking freedoms that in some cases we've had for, you know, 50 years, in some cases we've had them for 70, in some cases, you know, 10, right? The fact that they had the votes to overturn Roe v. Wade and then did it and upend abortion rights nationwide has been a slap in the face, a wake-up moment for voters across the country. And I'm not so sure that we would have won all of these special, Democrats would have won all of these special elections that they have, that the 2022 midterms would have turned out as well as they actually did, and Democrats would have overperformed the way they did in the midterms, and that we wouldn't be facing a potential tidal wave coming this November without that. So I'm sorry. That's a.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
random thought, but.
Life takes funny turns, and you know, it's definitely a making lemonade out of lemons sort of situation. And Alito did say in the decision that women are not without power. I mean, he said it tauntingly. He thought he was all being all smug with himself, like, because it really looked bad when a bunch of men were making this decision. And he said basically women are not without political power. And it's like, no, they're not. And they finally have woken up to it.
Can I just say that he said that after his wife hoisted up the upside down flag on his house and put him on notice that women actually have a lot of political power. Sorry, that's not, I don't know. Does everybody know about that? Do you know about that, Marcos? Of course you do.
I know about that. And yes. Even Republicans are a little uncomfortable about that one. I mean, he blamed his wife. Like, are we going to,
yeah,
I mean,
he blamed his wife.
Like, it's literally the flag after Trump lost, they hung the flag, the American flag upside down, the universal signal.
After January 6th.
Oh, after January 6th. Oh, even worse.
I mean, after Trump lost in January 6th, I mean, they hung the flag upside down between on their house, the Alitos, supposedly Mrs. Alito and not Mr. I don't know, whatever. and did it in between January 6th and the time that Biden got inaugurated as the next president. It was it's crazy. Anyway, that was that's a total segue. You, I just couldn't have you talking about Alito and women, you know, Alito saying that women had political power without noting that he blamed his wife for hoisting up an upside down American flag on his house. I don't know how we got here, Marcos. I don't know, but here we are.
So Trump has sort of opened up this can of worm, and you better believe that every Republican candidate running for office is going to be asked for this. And so it's kind of interesting seeing in Maryland, where former Governor Larry Hogan, who was fairly popular as a Republican governor in very, very blue Maryland, is running for Senate. Now, don't matter how popular he is, when you run in a state that is that, you know, you're able to win locally. You know, Kentucky, you know, we got Democratic governors. If they run for Senate, they lose big, right? I mean, this is not easy terrain, right? But he's got an uphill fight, Larry Hogan. And one of the big issues, obviously, is abortion. And he is he claims to be a pro-choice Republican. In his first ad, Carrie,
he's recently found a new religion on being pro-choice. I mean, you know, he claims to be pro-choice, but of course, as governor, he did veto a bill that would have expanded in 2022. It would have expanded abortion access. That was before the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade, but still, he vetoed a bill that would have, yeah.
Did he mention that in his ad, touting his amazing support for abortion?
Well, okay, so I'll be fair. I haven't seen the ad yet, but Politico reported this morning that he's got a new ad in which he's gonna and they've seen it. I haven't seen the ad. It's gonna come out. It's gonna start airing on Wednesday. So most of you guys are gonna be listening to this on Wednesday. And if you're in Maryland, you can look forward to seeing an ad from Larry Hogan expressing his support for codifying Roe v. Wade into federal law if he's elected senator of Maryland. Now, just to be clear, this is Maryland is not a seat that had been on the map for Democrats, right? Larry Hogan, because he has been a very popular governor, had been a very popular governor of that of the state, two terms. And his approval rating was pretty good. I think it was in the two-thirds region. His approval rating crossed partisan lines. People generally liked him, saw him as a moderate, elected him twice. And him running for that Senate seat puts it in play for Republicans because it's doubtful that really any other Republican could have made a real play for the seat. And he will be facing progressive Angela also Brooks in the general election. She just won that against a guy, a self-funder, what's his name, Trone, who dropped millions and millions into the primary trying to win against her. But anyway, she won. She's facing Hogan. And I think I just wrote up this piece on this. I interrupted you. Were you going somewhere? Because I kind of
keep going.
Okay, sorry. Okay, so what's interesting about this is Hogan, even though he's popular and has won twice there, has never run in a nationalized environment, right? He has managed as governor of that state to sort of escape the stench and the extremism that has overtaken the Republican Party during the Trump era. And now he's this is wild.
And what's more, just to add to that, governor races in Maryland are in the even number years, right? So they're not actually lined up to that national election. So it becomes a much more state election. Furthermore, there hasn't been any real contested Senate or other statewide election races. Republicans have not been competitive, right? So it was basically him on an island running very local election, sort of insulated from national implications. And so it makes it easier for people to vote for somebody like Hogan, particularly in a what is otherwise a one-party Democratic state where you have massive Democratic majorities in the state legislature. And in situations like that, we see it in Louisiana on the reverse, right, where you have Democratic governors can win regularly. Kentucky, Democratic governors win regularly. Massachusetts, Republican governors win regularly. Like when you have a one-party state, it's easier for people to say, like, all right, we're going to vote for somebody to be governor. That'll be a little bit of a check, just a little bit. But if they, you try to run those same people nationally, and it's like, And that's why I'm not overly worried about it. You got to be a little concerned. But but anyway, he has been insulated. So to your point, yes, he hasn't run a campaign with national implications.
Right. And at the same time that he's got news breaking, you know, Politico sort of breaks the news that he's got this new $1 million ad buy coming out in which he's going to say, I will, if elected, cast a vote to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law, right? At the same time that he's got this new, news about this new ad coming out, he's got Trump putting contraception on the chopping block. I mean, you know, like this is the environment he's running in that he's never had to deal with. And mm-hmm. the only question for pro-choice voters in Maryland isn't, will you cast that vote? It's, will you caucus? Will you switch parties and caucus with Democrats?
Yes, because control of the Senate.
Right, exactly. Because if he wins, he will almost single-handedly, if Hogan wins that seat in Maryland, he will almost single-handedly guarantee that Republicans take control of the chamber. And there is no way, hell is going to freeze over before Republicans will put anything like abortion protections up for a vote in the Senate, right? Let alone the House, if they control the House too. So like, it doesn't matter. He gets to say, it's like a freebie for him to say, I would cast a vote to do this. Yeah. Well, you know what? It won't matter if he's a senator, because Republicans will own the chamber and they will be, and the only thing mm-hmm. they will be putting through are abortion bans. That's the only thing that they will be putting up for a vote.
Yeah. And he votes against them when he has his committee assignments and money and just the pressure of being, you know, in that majority party, he's not going to vote against those abortion measures. He just won't. So there's a similar situation a little bit in reverse, though. In Texas, you have, again, it's a red state, but you have Ted Cruz running, and Ted Cruz is not very popular. Like, nobody likes Ted Cruz. And so there is an outside chance, just like in Maryland, there's an outside chance that Republicans can make it competitive. In Texas, there's a good, maybe a better chance, but still an outside chance that Democrats can make the state competitive. And Ted Cruz is pretty much feeling the heat. And you can see that because he just introduced a bill with Senator Katie Britt that would, and I haven't seen the details, so the fine print, it's probably, everything's in this fine print, but that would legalize IVF treatment. We had a court in Alabama that made it illegal.
Protect
IVF, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's already legal. Right. And it's clear that they're struggling with this issue. The anti-abortion movement has decided that that's a hill they want to die on, that IVF is murder, that those eggs that are frozen for implantation and are then discarded is murder, and they're going to die on that hill. So it sort of roiled the anti-abortion movement. And so to me, the fact that Cruz, who has been very reliably part of that camp, very reliably anti-abortion, that he's sort of scrambling on this issue and trying to inoculate himself from it, is also telling of how much damage that is being done. And he would not be doing this, Kerry, if he didn't have polling showing that it was actually impacting his ability to win that race.
Absolutely. In fact, I wrote a piece, I don't know if it was last week or a couple weeks ago, about Cruz trying to moderate on a host of issues. And he was kind of painting it. It was Texas Tribune, I think, who did a story about how Cruz was now trying to paint himself as sort of an across the aisle dealer, you know, a moderate bipartisan deal maker. That's how Cruz is running. And you want to know what the first line of my piece was, Marcos?
Tell me.
Ted Cruz's internal polling must be atrocious. Because there is no other explanation for him to be like, just kidding. I'm not a MAGA firebrand. I'm not like pro-Trump. I'm not trying to kneecap, Mitch McConnell. I'm not that guy. I'm the IVF supporter guy. That's who I am. I mean,
it was the FAA reauthorization bill that he's suddenly Mr. Bipartisan and deal maker, and let's all come together and talk. And literally, it's funny because there's been stories in the Politicos and you know, the DC trade press, where you have senators on both the Democratic and Republican side like laughing their asses off. And yes. pretending to be Mr. Reasonable Dealmaker. Like, everybody thinks it's freaking hilarious because it's so not his character. And there's no other reason, Carrie. That's not who he is.
Yeah, what's shocking is that earlier this year, Tammy Duckworth, Democratic senator from Illinois, was trying to put forward a bill protecting IVF, and she used IVF treatments, I believe, if I remember correctly, in order to conceive, maybe twice, two times.
Yes.
Okay, so heartfelt issue for her, making a serious effort following that about Alabama Supreme Court ruling outlawing IVF, and somehow Ted Cruz wasn't a prominent figure in Duckworth's fight to get that through, and she wasn't able to, garner the support for it. But now Cruz has his own bill, and he's very excited about it. So it's just, I don't know, a few polls, and the fact that you even though you're a good fundraiser, your Democratic opponent is out fundraising you by several million dollars. Sometimes that's like, clarity comes.
Clarity. I like that. he's found his path. He's seen his future. So, Carrie, one last point before we sign off. And I believe you wrote about this, if I'm not mistaken, but there was polling that showed that 18% of Americans blamed Joe Biden for the demise of Roe v. Wade protections, including a significant number of Democrats. And we've seen this. I have seen focus group testing, where people would say things like, well, it's Biden's fault because he was president. And they don't know about the Supreme Court. They don't know. And there was an infuriating, I think, was it a Wall Street Journal piece or Washington Post? There's an infuriating piece where some woman's like, who was like labeled as a strong abortion rights supporter, who said, well, she wasn't going to vote for Trump, but she didn't know if she was going to vote for Biden because she hadn't heard him say anything in opposition to the Dobbs decision.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, if you willfully put your head in the sand. But there is a significant number. And this is why I've always said that, I've been sort of on this theory that don't really pay attention to the polls until after the convention.
Right.
Because there's still a significant number of people that blame Biden. And we're talking a couple points here or there, right?
We're talking about a couple points. I pulled this story up that I wrote about it because it was an eye-catching headline in the New York Times, and it came from their Times Siena battleground state poll, right? That found 17% of voters blame Joe Biden for the end of Roe v. Wade. Now, as with all issues, a lot of the rub is in the partisan breakdown, right? Mm-hmm. 78% of Democrats rightly blame Donald Trump. So nearly 8 in 10 Democrats blame Trump for the end of Roe v. Wade.
Should be 100.
Okay. A 42% plurality of Republicans also blame Donald Trump. Okay. But 12% of Democrats said Biden deserved at least some of the blame, and nearly a quarter of Republicans did, and 18% of independents also thought Biden deserved some of the blame. So in a normal election, this would, the advertising is still getting going, right? It's clear that this is a good issue for Biden. I don't want anyone to walk away thinking it's not a good issue for Biden. Uh-huh. It's a very good issue for Biden. Navigator Research did a very extensive poll after Trump came out with his whole states' rights muckety muck on, abortion, and said the states are going to regulate it and they'll do the abortion bans and it's up to them, and then wouldn't say whether or not and still won't say whether or not he would veto a national abortion ban, and still won't say that he won't, he won't sign or whether he'll sign one. He won't.
Not a hard question to answer.
No, exactly. It should be really easy for him to say, no, yeah, I'll never sign one of those things. I'll veto it immediately.
Even if it was about leave it to the states, he could say that. Like, no, right. I'll always leave it to the states.
But he can't even do that.
Because as much as he lies, he can't lie about that. It's really weird.
Yeah, well, and so, no, it's really weird, except that he needs to hang on to all those evangelicals, doesn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly.
So, but I just want to be clear that, like, the Navigator research poll, actually, I think they did the most comprehensive battery of questions about where Biden and Trump stand on that since Trump came out. And it was really clear that I think voters were catching on to the idea that Trump was going to sign a national abortion ban. In that poll, 55% think Trump would sign a national abortion ban. 65% in that Navigator research poll now say Trump thinks abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. And that's an increase, a nearly 10-point increase since last September. And 62%, so this is on the order of two-thirds, held Trump responsible for the end of Roe. Okay. So this is a good issue for Biden. But what Marcos is pointing out is that in a election that is clearly going to be decided on the margins, we cannot have 12% of Democrats. And let me just say, you never know if those Democrats are like progressive Democrats or whether they're like old time union Democrats who now vote for Republicans and still hold a Democratic, you know, label, but aren't so. But we can't have 12% of Democrats saying that Biden deserves at least some of the blame. He does not. And you can't have 18% of independents saying the same. You want everyone to be totally clear. You might not gain, you know, some of those of that 18% of independents, for instance, some of them might be, you know, anti-abortion. They might not be pro-choice, but you want to have everyone be clear, because if 100%, which is never achievable, if 100% of the population is clear about who did it, then you're going to win like 80% of them, right? Mm-hmm. On this issue, at least, if this is a top issue for them. Yeah. So Democrats, Biden, et cetera. So anyway, I don't want people to walk around being like, oh my God, we're doomed because 17% of the population doesn't understand who's responsible for this. That's not true, but I do think that there is a little bit of ground, a little bit of clearing up to do. And you know, I think it'll get done. Like you're already seeing new ads from outside groups that, you know, they're going to spend hundreds of millions on abortion and other issues.
It's contraception now.
might want to add contraception. I mean, that is an attack ad, just like calling out the name of anti-Trump forces.
Oh my, I can't believe Trump is doing everything he can to help Biden, you know, win this election. So Carrie, I totally agree with you. And that's why I say I wouldn't worry too much about polling until after the convention, because people are not fully plugged in. They don't quite fully understand. There's still misconceptions. And this is what the campaign's going to do, right? It's going to be, you know, putting blame exactly where it belongs. And then the convention's going to help define what Biden's going to bow. And there's always a couple points boost around the conventions. We have the advantage that the Republican one is like,
July,
right? Democratic one is like a whole month later. So you're not even going to have an ability of the Republicans, which they did last time because Trump was the incumbent, remember? So you had Biden's convention and then you had Trump to like stymie whatever growth. Yeah.
That's right. Let's just make the point that on June 27th, you're going to get the first debate, which I want to be really clear about this too. The Biden campaign totally backed Trump into a corner on this and got the terms that they wanted. If it turns out like the terms that he agreed to is it's just the two of them. There's no audience. It's in a, you know, TV studio and it's in June. And the reason you want the first one in June, which is historically unprecedentedly early, right? The reason you want that is because there are a bunch of people who aren't tuned into this race yet. And they are the lower information voters. And the low information voters, that's not a knock. That's just people who aren't paying it quite as much
they're
attention.
They're busy with other things in life. They're trying to survive. It's a hard life. Like, no judgment. Yeah.
those are the people who are largely going to decide this election in the end, is which way they break. Do they break Trump or Biden? And so literally Biden's pollster said, we have to figure out how to force our way into homes in order to get, you know, shake them awake and be like, here's what's at stake. Here's the contest. It's these two people. I know you don't want it to be, but like, here's what's at stake. And I'm paraphrasing him a little bit, but like within a few days of him saying that on a podcast, then we get, you know, the Biden campaign backing Trump into a corner to agree to a June 27 debate, because I mean, that forces into your way into people's homes.
That was such an alpha move, you know, for somebody who prides himself in being a big negotiator. Trump really blew that one because he immediately jumped and agreed to it on Twitter and or on whatever his thing was.
Yeah.
And I'm sure his campaign must have been like, what are you doing? But by then well, he couldn't back out. Yeah.
He had already, because he's such a blathering, you know, idiot yeah. half the time or most of the time, whatever. He's such a bloviator. He had said, I want to debate Joe Biden and I'll do it anytime, anywhere, any way you want, Joe. And Joe was like, okay, make my day, pal. Let's do it. And then laid out the terms. And there was no way at that point that Trump, who thinks he's an alpha male, could say, oh no, I don't want those terms.
Funny. Walter, our producer, has got a great Seth Meyer quote about the debate win, about Biden getting Trump's. And the quote is, quote, Biden getting Trump to agree to no audience. It's like getting a vampire to meet you at noon on the beach during a garlic festival. Love it.
That's right.
Biden's going to want to be talking about abortion, and now he's going to be wanting to talk about contraception. Like, this is all going to be fundamental to the Democratic case moving forward. I think it puts Republicans in an even weaker footing in the months ahead. And it's like a gift from heaven. Like, I could not believe that he did this it wasn't like he was cornered into, it was a good question by a real journalist.
It was a very Trump, clear, straightforward question.
Trump is not used to talking to real journalists. I was actually surprised that it wasn't like Newsmax or, you know, whatever, ONN or Fox News. I think this is why they don't trot him out to talk, because I think this is the sort of thing that a Sean Hannity would never ask him, but he got asked by this reporter.
Sean Hannity would ask something like that, then be shocked at his response, and then Sean Hannity would say, you don't really mean that the states are going to regulate, because this has happened, you don't really mean that the states are going to regulate contraception, do you? And then Trump would say, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Yeah, I do. The states are going to regulate it. I mean, I can't tell you, there's been at least three instances where Sean Hannity has asked Trump a question about like Russia ties or being a dictator, right?
They say you're going to be a dictator. You're not really going to be a dictator. And he's like, yes, I will. He said that.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
On day one, I'm going to be a dictator.
Sean Hannity is the master of trying to give Trump to him, hey, buddy, I'm giving you an out here. Please. For the love of God, please take it. And then Trump goes, oh no, that's exact. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it.
So, Carrie, on that note, that is our show for today. Thank you so much, as always, for such lively conversation. Thanks to Walter for producing. Thanks to Perry for helping out behind the scenes. And thanks to you, the reader, listener, viewer, for being part of this movement to save our democracy from the forces of MAGA and Donald Trump. So I'm so incredibly grateful that you are here fighting side by side in this battle for our democracy. Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. Catch you all next week. Bye-bye.